Hello, and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
Lita and Ron are recovering from surgery, so this is my chance to take over the show. Huzzah! Mine! All mine!
Jean?
Yeah?
I'm right here.
Oh.
And Ron won't be joining us today. He's getting out of the rehab facility.
When you say that, it sounds like drug and alcohol rehab.
Oh, no. He had his
physical
shoulder.
Physical rehab.
Yeah, he had his shoulder repaired.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I guess I can share the show with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll go on to our regular show.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. I might leave you and just let you take over now that you did that. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
On today's show, we are speaking with Jennifer Crowder about young onset Parkinson's disease. Jennifer, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Sure. Well, I'm Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
47. I don't usually use traditional identifiers to describe myself. A lot of people introduce themselves with their career or their family status.
Sure.
I don't do that. I describe who I am and not what I do in my relationship to other people. So that being said, I am tenacious, thoughtful.
You can,
creative, bold, feisty, sarcastic, scared, vulnerable, and I'm a fighter.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent way to describe
to
yourself.
Great.
I may borrow that as my introduction in the future.
You should. I'll allow it.
All right. Yeah, that's a great way to introduce yourself. Because especially post-pandemic, everyone is, I think, a little bit different than who they were going into the pandemic.
That's true.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you for having me. Anything I can do to spread awareness about this disease and where I am in it, I'm happy to do.
Great.
Excellent.
Yeah, because it's not something we had never heard of.
We heard of early onset Alzheimer's, but we had not heard of early onset Parkinson's.
Really?
So to start us out, if you could explain what early onset Parkinson's is.
Or young onset.
Yeah. What's the age that it could hit?
Well, young onset Parkinson's is Parkinson's that starts when you're young.
Okay.
You're welcome.
That was easy. when were you diagnosed?
Well, I'll explain a little further the actual question that you asked.
Sure.
Young Parkinson's is a malfunction in your brain cells. So our malfunction is our ability to make and receive dopamine. And dopamine is one of those great chemicals that everybody produces in times of, like, if you take it, it's like a risk reward chemical. So when you do something a little bit scary and you get that little, and you went through it and you got to the other side and you're like praising yourself, you're giving yourself good human points for doing something like jumping over a rock or going down slippery stairs, you know, anything that your brain perceives as a risk, after you're done and you're on the other side of it, you get a hit of dopamine. So my brain is terrible at all of those things. And young onset is for people that were diagnosed between the ages of 20 and 50.
Okay.
The average age of people getting diagnosed currently is 60, and it's getting younger and younger. About one third of people with Parkinson's are young onset. And our population is growing the fastest. There are people that are diagnosed even younger than 20.
Those
are juvenile Parkinson's.
Wow.
And yeah, I know quite a few people who started in their 20s.
Okay. And I'm thinking that it's hard to get that diagnosis because they're not looking for it in individuals at that age. And Jennifer, could you describe what symptoms led you to seek out medical care? And did your friends and family notice these symptoms as well?
Yes and yes.
When
I started showing symptoms, I was 20. And in retrospect, a lot of my physical problems and emotional problems, because it's not just a movement disorder. I'll explain further in a minute, but it affects emotional. It affects a lot of the different body symptoms. It's not just tremor or walking disorder. A lot of people just see the physical aspects of the disease and assume that's all we're dealing with. It is certainly not. I wish it was. So my first symptom was a tremor in my left pinky. And by the time I was 24, so just 4 or 5 years later, it was progressed so far that it was in both hands, both arms, both legs, and both feet. So in just 4 years, I was moderate to severe. And at that point, I thought all of my other physical ailments were due to other medical problems that I have.
Sure.
And it's only been in recent years that I realized that I've had this, I have that, I have this, and I have that. And they're all connected to Parkinson's disease. My family, I couldn't hide it from them if I tried. We're all very, very close. And the tremor was so severe that I couldn't hide it. So even if I wanted to, I couldn't.
Okay.
And how long did it take for you to get a diagnosis?
20 years.
Wow.
Even with that kind of tremors?
Yes. So, yeah. So in defense, sort of the medical community, I was young. I was female, which is at that, 20 years ago, that was pretty unheard of. And I was only reporting the tremor because I didn't know all the other things were part of it. And when I would go to these appointments, I would say, but I can turn it off, which all Parkinson's people, until you're in the very late stages, can turn it off. So if you concentrate really, really hard, you can control your tremors for a very brief period of time. So if you need to do something and you just have to button that button, you can like kind of shake it off and like really concentrate and button it real quick, and then your tremors are back. So I thought, well, it can come and go, which the medical community at that time didn't know that was possible. And it took millions of people saying, yeah, I can do that too, for them to start listening to that.
Well,
So after the diagnostic process got underway, things got really, really bad around the age of 35, 37. My tremors were so severe that I couldn't work anymore. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't shower by myself safely. I couldn't dress myself. I couldn't walk by myself. It's kind of difficult to talk about. It was a really dark time in my life. I was running a year before that. I was working full-time, going to school full-time, running my household, doing the grocery shopping, doing the laundry. Volunteering, always on the go, constant. And then I moved, and it was during that move my stress went way up, and all of my symptoms were like, we are not going to be ignored anymore. And I went for a walk with my husband, and my left foot would not pick up, which is another sign of Parkinson's. And I was, this has got to stop. You know, we've got to. We've got to find an answer. So went to another new doctor. And at the time, I was only seeing neurologists. And this is another secret that nobody told me. I didn't know that there's another subset of neurology. I thought, I'm seeing a specialist, that's good enough. I didn't know that there is a subset of neurology called movement disorder specialists. And it took 20 years for someone to tell me, you should see somebody in the movement department. And I was like, what are you talking about? Nobody had ever said that to me.
Right.
So it was on their recommendation that I went to a movement disorder specialist. And they're like, you have Parkinson's. I mean, it was a series of tests and medicine to get me there over a year. But that's actually how I got my diagnosis. I finally started seeing a movement disorder specialist. And over the course of like 18 months, we finally got the actual diagnostic results.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And that's a lot to go through. I'm very sorry.
Yeah. But thank you.
I'm glad that you were able to finally, you know, get to the right healthcare provider and the right specialist.
Yeah. Yeah. There are quite a few bumps in the road during that time. I'll just call it misdiagnosed.
Right.
I was told that it was psychological, and even though I had effective medicine and that I was making it up and I was trying to get attention and I was, you know, banned from a practice because they thought I was lying.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And honestly, it has caused medical PTSD. I have nervous breakdown every doctor's appointment. I know that my current team is phenomenal. Number one, I'm not doing anything to upset them ever. I want them. But my brain is just like, always, what if, what if, what if? Because they took me off medication that worked, and I was able to carry a cup of tea for the first time. And when they told me I couldn't have that medicine that got me there, it was devastating to know that I was just right back to where I started. It wasn't over yet. It was very difficult.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It wasn't you. You don't owe me an apology.
You had to go through that. Yes. And we definitely feel for you. And I know it's hard for medical professionals to say, I don't know and I don't have the answers you need.
Right.
And instead of saying that, to put a label on it and say, oh, no, it's this.
Yeah, exactly.
Is maybe something that, you know, should be focused on in in school.
So to all of our medical students out there.
Yes, you may not always have the answer, and you may need to send a patient to someone else, and that doesn't make you less of a doctor. It makes you a better doctor and a more informed doctor. And there are, of course, there's the psychological aspect of it.
Right.
But it's,
Now you're grieving the loss of all of your job,
your
independence, your school, and everything.
So of course you could use, you know, the psychological help and support,
not for the same reason they were saying.
Right.
Exactly.
And Jennifer, does Parkinson's disease run in your family?
It does not. Thank goodness. I'm so, so thankful I'm the only one with this, because I have seen it in others and it's devastating to watch. So for me, I would rather go through it than watch someone go through it, because I feel like I have a little bit control, or I have a better understanding of what's happening as I'm experiencing it than as I'm watching it. And when I got diagnosed 7 years ago, the numbers were 50-50. Half of us didn't have familial and half of us did. Now it's just 7 years later, now the numbers have changed. So it's 10 to 15% are familial, and the rest of us have no family connection.
Okay. And I know we've
there's no rhyme or reason why they haven't figured out why some of us get it and some of us don't.
Yeah. And I know there's been a lot of research popping up lately about causative factors.
There's no solid answer quite yet.
Right.
No.
Right. Right.
And how has your healthcare team decided to take care of this problem? Is there any treatment that you're on, or?
I'm on a pretty strict medication schedule.
Okay.
Meaning that I have specific times that I have to take my medication, and that is 5 times a day, every day. We just went through a meds change, which for the meds that I'm on is extremely difficult. It puts your body and emotions through a lot to raise and lower those levels. It's painful. It's very distressing. So, you know, it's just fine tuning those meds, even though it's just a dose here and there, or lowering a dose or raising a dose. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. In addition to that, I do a lot of high impact exercise. They call it forced intensity, because the intensity that you would normally put out at the gym, even if you're a super athlete and going through marathons and things like that. The training regimen for us is so vast because we have to hit so many different areas of the body and mind that you can't get to the level that we need to get to on our own. So your body naturally says, I'm done. That's it. You got to quit now. We have to go further than that because that's where the dopamine lives. We have to think. Okay. We have to see it as a risk and see it as an extra effort to get there in order to produce that dopamine.
Okay.
Okay. And you said that you had to stop taking one of the medications. Was it because of the side effects of the medication, or was it just not as effective as it had been
for
in the past?
This time, good question. This time it was because I was having side effects of too much medication. So I was having things that are called dyskinesia, which is unusual movement, kinetic, this unusual. So that can be caused by either the disease or too much medication. So you're coming and going, they've got us. So my doctor, who's phenomenally, he's just the most brilliant guy I've ever met. He saw the pattern of how my symptoms were. And he's like, I don't think you're that part of your disease yet. Let's lower your meds. Let's take you off of this one and see if that is the magic that you need. He's more inclined to have less meds than more. We lowered it and he was right. He was right.
And this is a weird question, but have you had any DNA testing to see how your specific, how your DNA and how your body specifically processes specific medications?
That's a good question. Like a metabolic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It is available. It is quite expensive. It is not covered by insurance.
Oh.
And because I don't have children, the emphasis isn't so much on me because I'm not going to pass it along genetically to anybody else. And because I don't have anybody else in my family in my direct circle, my siblings, my parents, none of them have shown any symptoms. So even though it would be a good idea just to see, it's not medically necessary for me to get that done.
Well, and I know there is to see the to check your genetic code to see if you're more likely to have Parkinson's disease or pass it along. I was thinking more along the lines of, and I know this is a relatively new field, testing, they can actually test your genetic code to see how your body will process the medications to see if there'll be I'll send you a link. You'll have to see what.
So, maybe you don't need a complete genome. You just need to
just to test for specific areas. But it's a new way of looking at medications too, because some people will process things too quickly, and it won't stay in your system long enough to be effective and things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The half life timing of the meds. So there's
meds,
So there's what we call on and off times. So right now I'm on because my meds are working. I just took it. But the off time is when I get closer to my next dose and the meds stop working. And the half time is because the meds are really, really strong during the first part of your new dose. And then they slowly taper off. So the half time is really what they're looking for is, when do you start feeling awful? I start feeling awful around 3. Okay, your next dose should be at 4 o'clock then.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
And you know what? I'm going to step on one of Lita's questions that she was going to ask later. But so do you make modifications to your daily activities to work around when your medication is most effective?
Yes, I have to. My entire circle is aware of I can't get away from it. They're very involved. So my closest friends, my husband, my parents, everybody knows, Jenny's times are at this. So we should get together in the morning for breakfast or in the early afternoon for early dinner. If I'm going out to a concert or comedy show with my friends, they all know that I have to rest quite a bit before that event and really, you know, change my medication. We got to park in a certain area. Somebody else has to drive. Everybody's involved in making sure that I'm as comfortable as I can be so everyone can have a good time. Because when I'm not having a good time and I can't move, then everybody else has to take care of me and come in. So the more that everybody can work together to get me well enough to enjoy our time together, then it benefits all of us.
Great.
That's fantastic. Yes. I'm glad you have that family and friend group there supporting you. That's wonderful. And Jennifer, what role did fitness play in your life before you received a diagnosis?
None at all.
Okay.
None at all. I joined several gyms, as one does. Sign up, go emphatically for 3 months, not see any results, get super bored, make excuses, and never go again. Pay for the rest of the 9 months without going. Once I started a little bead of sweat, I was out. I didn't want to be the fat, sweaty girl in the gym.
Okay.
You know, if people stare, I'm huffing and puffing. My face turns really red. And it was embarrassing. I was tremoring. I had all these symptoms going on. I was scuffing my foot because I can't pick up my left side. And I didn't know. So all of those things were, you know, look at me, which at that time I was very uncomfortable with. So I wouldn't go. So there was almost no fitness in my life previously. And I filled every hour of my day so I wouldn't have to look at that. I was busy with all kinds of other activities. So,
Okay.
I avoided
it. We understand that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely understand that. Jennifer, could you tell us about the Rocksteady Boxing and its role in your life?
Yes, please. I love this program. I attribute it with saving my life, literally, because right after the diagnosis, even though my medications were working and my physical symptoms were non-noticeable. I looked neurotypical. I was in a deep depression, honestly, and for months, I had no purpose for life. I had no goals. I had no outlet. I had a lot of anger and resentment. And I started Rocksteady and I hated it because did I say that? It was reality. I could not avoid looking at what I was doing and how I was doing it. I could not avoid seeing how slow my reactions were. There were mirrors everywhere and I could see my face and how angry and just like horrible I was feeling, and I just did not care. In addition to that, I was physically unfit, and these people, I was 40 years old. There were people double my age running circles around me. I couldn't lift anything. I couldn't hold a plank. I couldn't do a lot. I couldn't even drive myself to the gym. My father-in-law drove me for the first month that I went. And I was faced with the future of the disease and all the other boxers. Like, it was just a lot all the time. But then I just kept going. I was just like, what else can I do? I've got nothing else. What else? I'm not doing anything else with my time. I might as well give it a shot. Let me just see if it works. What else do I have? So I kept going, and eventually I started regaining skills. I was able to build up my endurance enough to take a shower after class. Because when I first went, I would go and work till I was so exhausted. And I'd just come home and immediately flop into the bed, and I couldn't even shower immediately. I was able to build up my strength to shower after class and then drive myself, relieving my father-in-law, Then two months later, I was driving back home and a song came on the radio and I felt happy, feeling happy for the first time in I don't know how long. And it was such an incredible moment. I pulled over and played the song again and sang along in a parking lot by myself, just to understand, you know, just really know that I was happy.
Acknowledging it. Yes.
Exactly.
I can appreciate that. Yeah.
Then I started talking with the other boxers, because when I first started, I didn't talk to anybody. They called me Hood Rat because of that, because I just had such a nasty attitude. And they told me all of their success stories. I had a friend that couldn't walk independently. 6 weeks later, she was running down the beach.
Wow.
It was just like incredible. I watched someone work their way out of a wheelchair to a walker, from a walker to assisted walking in a year. So I could see that, okay, these people are quite a bit older than me and they're working really hard and it's working for them. So it started to, you know, once I started observing and kind of putting forth a little bit more effort, it really started to pay off. And I started being able to jump rope and I started, really wailing on the bag. And they call me heavy hitter because I can hit pretty hard. And I noticed all of this, that this gym was different because I could tremor in front of everyone and nobody cared. I could sweat like a pig and everybody's like, congratulations, you're getting that dopamine. So when you're sweating, you're creating dopamine. From exertion, I should say. It's so hot.
Right.
And, you know, just little improvements here and there. I was able to go and clean my house on my days off from the gym. Those little successes really built up for me. And the camaraderie, the safe space of the gym, it was just tenfold. And once I started seeing all those improvements, I was in all the way.
And it sounds like huge improvements and things you should definitely be
proud of.
Yeah, proud of. That's fantastic.
Yeah. You
worked hard to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for other Parkinson's people
who are just like considering
to getting into that rock steady?
If you're newly diagnosed and you just learned about rock steady and there's a gym near you, I would encourage them to give it 6 weeks.
Okay.
Just like AA or, you know, NA, give it 6 weeks of all you have. Go as often as you can. Work as hard as you can. Don't go with, you know, a full face of makeup. Don't go with the intention of just spending time at the gym. Go with the intention of working hard as you can. If you're 100% is just walking laps around that gym, then do that. If you're 100% is sitting for half the class, then do that. But go and work as hard as you can. Give your 100%. And I guarantee you'll see a difference either mentally, emotionally, physically, because we work on everything. We work on balance, motor control, cognitive. We'll change the way that you walk because our gait is often stuttering or slow. Your posture will change. You can literally see these changes in each other and yourself. And once you start seeing little bits of improvement, what else can I do? How much more can I affect? It literally gave me a reason to live and gave me goals. When we got diagnosed with this disease, we got told that we couldn't do a lot of things. We got taken out of a lot of situations. Some of us can't work anymore. A lot of us are catered to quite a bit. Once some people get diagnosed, all of their power is taken away. They're suddenly a patient and they have a caregiver and they have a walker or something that assists them. They're on all these medications and your power is taken away. When we're in the gym, especially if you have a really great coach. They give you all that power back. They believe that you can do more. They push you to fight harder. They push you to run more. They push you to do heavier weights because they believe that you can. And to have somebody believe that you can do more when other people believe that you can't do anything, it's a no-brainer. How can you stay out of that environment? Even if you don't see muscle building, you're not losing weight, you're improving your symptoms. You're able to walk. You're able to drive. You're able to clean your house. You're able to communicate. You're able to write again. It's having just basic functions return to your life, even if it's just for a little bit. It's worth all the work in the world.
Sure. And it's great that you are the one doing it. I mean, medication is fantastic, but this is something that you can do for yourself,
exactly.
Which sounds very empowering.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, I call it empowerment restoration. That's exactly what it is, because you're doing it yourself. Nobody's doing it for you, and you're creating your own results.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
I was the only woman in a lot of my gyms. It's only very recently that I have other females in my class. I used to call my classes Eight Men and Jen, because every time a woman would come in, she would see how hard we do. And it's very, you know, you don't see a lot of women, especially older ages and stages, with boxing gloves on. It's an intimidating environment. And a lot of women aren't taught to fight. We're taught to suppress that, to be nice, be demure, and no, don't build your muscles, don't be bulky, don't be strong. Here, we're like, absolutely not. Floor it. Do everything that you can. And we believe that you can, and we know that you should. It's wonderful to see that it's a lot of women are coming into the gym. Some of them stay. It's kind of difficult, but it's, and also women aren't diagnosed as often as men either. So
sure. It's fantastic that they can come in and see someone like yourself being a role model.
Yeah. They call me the mayor, because every time somebody new comes in, I'm like, welcome. Let me show you all the things. I'm teaching them punches, and I'm showing them how to stand.
Excellent.
And helping them with their gloves. I just know that it's going to work, and I know it's going to change their lives. And I just can't wait for them to get started.
Excellent.
Great. And Jennifer, are there other lifestyle changes that have helped either alleviate or ameliorate the symptoms that you're experiencing?
Did you say ameliorate? I love that word.
Me too. I love that I kind of did an alliteration, but yeah, I just needed one more A in there somewhere.
A leaf, maybe. And the problem is that a lot of the changes I've had to make, I don't agree with.
Okay.
Meaning that I'm still that high functioning mindset in a non-functioning body. So I'm still that same person that worked 55 hours a week, that went to school full time, that ran my household, was very active in the volunteer community, and doing all of the things. That's still my brain. I still want my house to be 100% clean all the time. I still want to do all of the things, but I can't. I see dust on my shelves, and I have to manage my energy, is basically what it is.
Right.
A lot of people are familiar with the spoon theory. We have to live by that, because if we're spending too much energy on one thing, we're not going to be able to get through the day, and our symptoms just go through the roof. So a lot of energy, reserves, and management. I had to pass off a lot of tasks to my husband. He doesn't fold towels right still.
You know what? I have this theory about laundry folding and dishwasher loading. Whoever is doing it, though, is doing it right.
I have had to take that because he doesn't listen.
Do you want your towels folded in thirds?
Yes.
Okay.
Half, another and tip? Then half, and then thirds.
Okay, okay. I was going to say, yeah, the half first, and then the thirds, that's yeah, half, yeah, can be, yeah.
And I, the thing yeah. Is that he's an engineer. So oh, okay. He knows. He right. Knows, and he just doesn't listen.
Yeah.
He's so willful. But
yeah,
you just learn to accept, mm-hmm. You know, if somebody's making you a meal, it may not be mm-hmm. Exactly the way that you made it, or you mm-hmm. Put the pasta in too early, or didn't load the dishwasher correctly. You just, it got done. Is mm-hmm. You know, right. If there's dishes in the sink overnight, I'm not okay with that, but I mm-hmm. Have to be. I have to allow okay. Those dishes to sit. It's not going to be the end of the world. But mm-hmm. If I continue to push myself all day doing all of the things,
mm-hmm.
I'll be a wreck for the rest of the week.
Right.
And then
right.
We're back to square one. And it took me a really long time to learn that, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to give all of that over to the disease.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's good. So besides medication, exercise, and lifestyle changes or scheduling,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does anything else help mitigate the symptoms?
Or make your day-to-day life a little bit easier or safer even?
Well, the house that we just bought this house 4 years ago.
Okay.
And it's our dream home. It wasn't in our dream condition when we bought it, but
okay.
It's getting there. It was uh-huh. Quite a lot of work. But the location of our house is in a town that has a lot of resources. We're away from the road, so it's kind of in a quieter setting. My entire main floor has everything that I need. So it's all open floor plan, nice wide doorways, huge kitchen, lots of low cabinets. My bathroom and laundry and bedroom are all on the same floor all together. My furniture is spaced in a specific way, so I'm not bumping into a lot of things. I don't have rugs. I have strong handrails because I uh-huh. Can't go without a handrail. My uh-huh. Lighting, I changed all the light fixtures in my main living area because certain lighting bothers me. The fan that you see behind me, I don't have it on with the light because strobe lighting really affects me. So all of my lights are low light. Bright overhead lights really irritate me, give me massive headaches. So just, you know, just everything, it's kind of specific to my disease. It just so happens that it makes a lot of people comfortable, but I just have to do those little tweaks and changes that if you came to my house, you wouldn't know it was a sick person's house. Uh-huh. Unless you notice, like, hey, there's no transitions between the doorways. Usually you have uh-huh. That little strip keeping mm-hmm. Your flooring together. We don't have that because it's easier for me to, if I'm not walking well, I can keep going. Or if I happen to be in a wheelchair, then I can still keep going. I don't have to worry about speed bumps.
But, right.
That
right.
Was a really wonderful and comprehensive list.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Yes, I think everybody's going to appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, now that we have a little bit of background information, it's time to talk about our initiative.
Okay.
To better serve our listening audience and our guests. We are an affiliate of a major medical supplier here in the United States, and you'll find affiliate links on our website, podcastdx.com. They aim to tailor specific medical supplies and equipment based on your diagnoses to make it less stressful than looking through an entire catalog for what you need. And we're open to your suggestions, and we'll adjust our offerings based on what you, our guests, and our listeners find helpful. But for now, let's return to our show.
Okay, Jennifer, you've said that your friends and your family have been wonderful and accommodating, but what role have they played in your healthcare journey?
It means quite a bit to me because I know there are so many people affected by this disease that don't have the uh-huh. Help that I have.
Uh-huh.
I have friends that hide their disease from their spouses. I have friends that never told their parents.
Wow.
And a lot of my friends that are still in the workforce have to hide it because uh-huh. What would you do if you had an employee with Parkinson's? it affects our mental cognition. It affects our, you know, everything. So I am just so thankful that I have people that have stuck by me through all of these changes, and that help me without even me asking. For instance, I was at a rock show last night with, you know, this great band that I follow locally, and somebody else drove me to the show. My sisters and my brothers-in-law met me there, and it was really, really hot. And my sisters, without even me saying anything, went to the bar, got a cup of ice, went to the bathroom, got paper towels, and cooled me. They put it all on the back of my neck without me even saying anything. They were so in tune that I wasn't feeling well that they just went and did that.
That's
wonderful. And it seems like a little thing, but I couldn't have done that for myself. I was in kind of a rough patch at the, you know, that point of the night, and they saw it and they're like, this is what she needs. So when my best friends offered to drive longer distance without me even having to ask, it means quite a bit because they're understanding what I'm going through. I had a friend at brunch ask a question, you know, because everybody knows I have it, but I said, you know, I was going through a rough patch. It was during that medication change. And she says, well, what is that like? And just asking that little bit and showing, like, what does that exactly mean to you? If you're having a bad day, what does that look like? Explain to me what your bad day is. What do you do to get through that bad day? How long do your bad days last? What can I do to support you during that time? Those meaningful conversations I keep with me, and it shows me that you're actually listening, you're in tune, and you know that it's not easy. And you want it to, you want to be a part of it, and you want to help me. And it's just, it means a bit.
That's incredible. That's an incredible testament to the fact that you have the best tribe around you.
I really do.
And you are going to excel because of it.
Yeah.
And I understand your grief for people that don't have that. I understand that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first got diagnosed, I was living 1,000 miles away from home. And, you know, all of these people are deeply ingrained in my life. They knew I was going through the diagnostic process. I had gotten a DAT scan. We were waiting for the results. And I had to make call after call after call to tell them all the news. And it was heartbreaking. And it attributed to some of that depression. And I'll be honest, not everyone ever picked up the phone again. A lot. I had quite a few people that couldn't hang and couldn't. I'm trying to put a light on it that's positive, that they love me so much they couldn't witness me go through such a tough time. That's how I'm framing it, because otherwise that makes them a real villain in my life, and I don't want that. But there have been people that were trying to be supportive, and during our exchanges were too emotionally taxing, and too, their lives were too dramatic and too up and down for my emotional well-being. And I had to have conversations with them that say, listen, I love you so much, but I can't watch you go through this. So I've been on the other side too. Your life is impacting my health, and I can't have that anymore. And we've had to part ways. It's just, I can't have stressors like that in my life.
It takes great strength to be able to acknowledge that and to say that. And and we definitely feel that you are mourning for what used to be.
Yeah.
And coming to terms with what is, and then finding out that, you know, what can be, though, can be really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's heartbreaking in a lot of ways that I'm at a point in my life that I have to do that, that that, you know, I don't want to be so sick that I can't handle a not so great friendship, but I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's great that you have friends and family that were able to pivot with you. And that's wonderful.
Yes. Jennifer, besides your wonderful friends and family, have you found any in-person or online support groups that were especially helpful that others might want to look into?
Yes. I go to a couple of in-person support group meetings. One is specifically for young onset, because we do have a lot of other problems in addition to all the medical stuff. Like I said, in the workforce, family life, social interactions. Some of us have different symptoms than later onset people do. The anxiety, depression, a lot of social, emotional symptoms are specific to young onset.
Okay.
Because it's hitting us at a different time in our lives, and it's impacting different parts of our lives.
Absolutely.
In addition to that, I'm on a few online forums. A friend of mine created a app for people with Parkinson's to conversate with each other and trade tips and tricks and stories with each other and lift each other up and help support each other. I'm not sure if he's ready to announce that launch yet, so I'm not going to say what it is. It's a fairly new app, but it's been tremendously helpful already. There's a great community on TikTok and Facebook, and there's a lot of resources if you're willing to put forth the effort to find them. They're not usually pretty easy to find. So, you know, you have to do a little bit of digging, but that's also pretty difficult with Parkinson's, because motivation and urgency, and we deal a lot with apathy. So if you don't care, then you're not going to do it. You know, apathy is one of the things that I really struggle with, and I really have to keep on task and have a list and try to motivate myself in different ways to reach out for help, because my inclination is to just deal with it myself and clam up, because the effort that it takes to get some of those things done is just not there a lot.
Jennifer, what advice do you have for someone who's been recently diagnosed with maybe juvenile, maybe young onset, or maybe standard Parkinson's disease?
Well, there's a lot. I'm trying to narrow it down to just a few things. Primarily, what I first tell everyone is don't learn everything. Do not do all of the research. Do not read all of the books. Don't go deep diving into all of the information, because thankfully, unlike a lot of illnesses and disorders, there's a lot of information about Parkinson's, our meds, what's going to happen. There's thousands of different outcomes and so many different medications and all these side effects from the medications. And this person got it at 65 and couldn't speak by the time they were 75. There's no linear predictability to any of this. My disease is my disease. I'm not the same as anybody else with this disease, because my brain chemistry is my own. So to learn about all of the possibilities and all of the medications, it is just going to be way too much. One of the first things I did was order Parkinson's for Dummies, because I didn't know. And I started reading it, and and none of it is good news. We all know where this is going, and it's not a great ending. So to be focused on what could be instead of what is really, really not healthy. and it's not going to do you any good. So my advice is to learn about your disease. If you have dystonia, learn about dystonia. If you're on carbidopa levodopa, learn about that. If you're on, if you're doing rock steady boxing, learn about that. Don't, because the information is so vast and so you can go in so many different deep dives that it'll consume you, and you won't be able to live today. You'll be living in the future.
Got it. It's excellent advice.
For everyone, live in the moment.
Which I usually hate that saying, live in the moment. It's the journey, not the destination. I'm a destination person. My mom is a destination person. I, you know, and it's, it really does force me to not only not look in the future, I can't look in the past either, which has also been very difficult. I used to be able to do this. I should be able to do that. I people in my age range are doing this, are doing that. I should be. I could be. I'm not. I can't. I can't. So I'm doing what I can.
Thank you. Thank you. And on a flip side, what recommendation do you have for friends and family members of someone that is living with early onset Parkinson's, and how they might best support them?
Like I touched on before, be aware of their circumstances and their symptoms and their routine. Accommodate them as much as you can without telling them you're accommodating them. They'll know. But to be pitied and looked down upon and catered to isn't exactly what we need to be included and adjusted for. If that makes, if you can see the difference there, don't make everything about Parkinson's, but realize that it's going to be a part of everything. One of my, I had a really good day last summer that, I mean, it's so little, but my best friend asked me for career advice. And she was in a pickle at work, and she didn't know how to handle the situation. And we just talked about that. That was it. We talked about her stuff. We had a martini. We had some appetizers. And it was one of the, I mean, for anybody else, that would have been just a Saturday. But the fact that my disease was not a part of that day, it was like I was free for like 4 hours. And I just, if you can, if we're hosting a party, help us in the kitchen. But don't say, hey, I noticed that you're tremoring. Go sit down. You know, don't make a deal out of it. Just do it.
Right. Like you would, anybody else.
Exactly. I
mean, Exactly. You are not, the disease.
There are times that I'm been in the hospital and I can't respond to phone calls, or I'm in apathy moment, or I'm depressed and I'm not answering phone calls. I'm not a great friend right now. I don't answer texts immediately a lot of times, even though my phone's almost always in my hand, because I just don't have the energy, the emotional bandwidth to interact in a positive way. So to be close to us without being needy is very important. So I can support you if you are having a hard time and you need emotional support, like you're going through something. I can do that. But to have that urgency and that need all the time is unsustainable for anybody. So understand, and this goes for anybody in a relationship with somebody with chronic illness. Chronic is all day, every day. We're never free of this. So to understand that our lives go up and down and that things take more energy than you could possibly understand, and just be understanding if we're not as responsive as we used to be.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today. How can our listeners learn more about young onset Parkinson's disease? And if you have any social media accounts you'd like to share, this is the time to do that also.
Well, if you want to find me on TikTok, I am Shaky Baker, all one word. I have a lot of my content really isn't about much of anything. A lot of it is about boxing because that's such a huge part of my life. But as far as resources, there's always the APDA website, which is American Parkinson's Disease Association, Parkinson's Foundation, Davis Finney Foundation, Michael J. Fox Foundation, Gail, that's my, I got to plug my doctor, Mayo Clinic, all of the, you know, high esteem medical facilities. Also, there's a lot of documentaries. Michael J. Fox has one on Amazon right now called Still. There's a Netflix movie. It's not even about Parkinson's, called Stutz. It's T-U-Z, I believe. S-T-U-T-Z. It's a Jonah Hill movie about his therapist, and the therapist has Parkinson's and displays exactly what energy management means. There's a few fictional movies, Love and Other Drugs. There's a few others that you can find pretty easily to see what life with Parkinson's is like. There's symposiums online, lots of literature. Thank goodness there's so much information about this disease. And honestly, just if you want to go to a support group meeting, those are available for friends and family and caregivers. I would recommend calling first before entering a support group meeting, because it is such a personal and private conversation that we are normally having. To invite somebody without the disease is kind of jarring for a lot of us, because it's such a sacred space. Same thing with Rocksteady. We don't really want an audience, but if you want to try out, if you have Parkinson's or you know somebody with Parkinson's and you want to see what we're doing, I would recommend calling the gym and having the gym clear it with the class first instead of just showing up. There's a lot you can look into.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's great that there is so much out there.
Yeah.
And because it also drives research dollars, which is vital.
Yes. Vital. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. And thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. I will say I'm a little disappointed. There was no swearing.
We had
prepared ourselves and not one. Not
we
one
didn't
swear
we're not
word
gonna
in
have
the,
to beep,
in the
beep,
bunch.
Beep, beep, beep.
But
I mean, we can go back.
It.
We can go back.
It's okay. I will get over it. It's just, I'll have to live with that. Kay. No problem.
I mean, I can fucking swear if you really need me to.
Oh, okay.
There
so,
you go.
There you
we
go.
Knew you'd get one on there.
Yeah. Okay. Because, Yeah.
Well, if you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us on our website, podcastdx.com, or on any social media by the same name.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or the qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.